The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 9, Text 29, given by His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj, recorded on September 3, 1998, in Zurich.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead then said, O Brahma, O depth of Vedic wisdom, be neither depressed nor anxious about the execution of creation. What you are begging from me has already been granted before. It is with great pleasure that we have this auspicious fortune of making some insignificant effort to serve you by speaking Srila Prabhupada's glorious words in his glorification of Srimad Bhagavatam. I would like to thank all of you for so kindly coming. In this chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Brahma is sitting in his exalted position, seeing all around him darkness. He is confused. He knows that he is supposed to create as a service to the Lord, various elements of the phenomenal nature. But he doesn't know how to do it. Actually, when Lord Brahma is originally born from the lotus flower that is sprouting from the navel of Sri Garbhodakshayi Vishnu, he doesn't know where he is, who he is, or what he's supposed to do. He's going down the lotus. He's going, the stem is coming up, trying to figure out, who is he? Where is he? What's happening? And then, Krishna doesn't make it easy for his devotee. Not only is he all alone, with no one to turn to, in the middle of total darkness, but then he sees below him is the ocean of devastation. And he's just on one little lotus flower. Then extremely powerful winds start blowing. There's a massive storm. The waves of the ocean become utterly turbulent. And his lotus flower is going back and forth like this. It's not that Brahma just said, was just chanting and dancing at the beginning. He went through terrible austerities. It was such a storm. The stem of the lotus was just being pushed back and forth by these high winds, and he was just trying to balance to stay on that lotus through these terrible, terrible, tragic crises. And below him was just these massive tidal waves in the ocean engulfing everything. Before Krishna empowers you to do a wonderful service and gives you the transcendental goal of life, first he wants to see how serious you are. Brahma was very serious. He didn't know what to do. Then the Lord whispered within his heart, tapa. First you have to perform tapasya. You have to concentrate your mind completely on me, totally controlling your senses. Brahma performed his tapasya, not just for a half hour, for hundreds of celestial years. Then the Lord appeared before him, revealed to him the highest truths of the purpose of life. Before Krishna taught him how to create, first he taught him what is the purpose of creation. To realize me. I am the Supreme Truth. And he imparted within Brahma's heart the knowledge of the Vedas. And what are the purpose of the Vedas? Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained, essentially there are three topics of the Vedas. Sambandha, how to establish our relationship with the Supreme Lord. And the Sambandha Murti is Madan Mohan. Why specifically? Because in this world, Madan, or Cupid, is bewildering everyone by these sharpened arrows of the material objects and their attractions to the senses. We are so much under the spell of these attractions. Maitunya Agara. And the ultimate attraction is the attraction between the opposite sexes. So Cupid is just keeping this whole energy infatuating and intoxicating everyone's minds irresistibly. But Krishna's Madan Mohan, he attracts even the mind of Cupid because he is all attractive. Therefore, the first principle of the Vedas is to establish our relationship with Madan Mohan, Krishna. To understand that he is the supreme cause of all causes. He is the all-attractive personality of Godhead. He is the object of love that everyone is longing to reciprocate with. And we are his eternal servants. His fragmental, infinitesimal parts and parcels. We cannot experience any truth or any reality of happiness without surrendering our hearts for his pleasure. That is called Sambandha Jnana. And the next principle that Krishna taught Brahma, essential, is Avideya. Now that we understand that we are the eternal servant of Krishna, and we should no longer serve the various moods of material nature, we have to somehow or other resist the temptations of our mind and senses for material life and engage them in Krishna service. Abhideya means to engage in active devotional service. And the Murti is Govinda. Govinda means one who gives pleasure to the senses, to the land, to the cows. When we engage our senses in the service of the Lord of the senses, Krishna, then we become free of all the designations of material bondage. Anyabhilashita sunyam jnana kamani navidam. Sarvapadi vimir muktam tatparat vena nirvalam. Rishikena rishikesa sevanam bhakti ruchate. When we engage purely in the process of bhakti, without mixing it with other lower conceptions, then we gradually experience the higher taste of Krishna consciousness by the mercy of Hrishikesh, Krishna. And what is the result? As we engage in the process of bhakti, bhajana kriya, gradually anartha nivritti, the unwanted desires of our heart begin to vanish. By the mercy of Krishna, they are removed. We cannot remove them. As we cannot move the Himalayan mountains, it's easier to move the Himalayan mountains with your hands than to remove the egoistic desires of your heart. They've been there longer. And they're bigger. They have higher peaks. So if you think you can move Mount Everest, you're here in Switzerland, Mount Matterhorn, it's called. You go there and try to lift it with your hands and move it into the ocean. You cannot. Even the whole Swiss army cannot do it. But it's easier to do that than to move the mountains the whole mountain range of your desires and egoistic attachments in this world. There's a story in the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam where the demigods and the demons were told that if you churn the ocean of milk with Mount Mandara, then you will get nectar. So they wanted that nectar. So they went to lift the mountain to carry it. But this was the highest mountain in the universe. And it's made out of gold. It's not an easy mountain. So here are the biggest demigods: Indra, Vayu, Brahma, Shiva, Varuna, Agni. Who are we compared to them? And then there was the greatest of the demons, Bali Maharaj, Namuchi, and all of these powerful, powerful Rakshasas who have strength greater than 10,000 elephants each. And they were all, millions of them, gathered around this mountain trying to lift it. They couldn't lift it. As they were trying to lift it, their hands were breaking, their limbs were being disjointed, they were bleeding, they were screaming in agony. So the demigods understood it's impossible. We can't even lift it up. What does we going to move it to the ocean? So they cried out for Krishna, help, help, save us. We cannot do it. The demigods sometimes are proud that, oh, I am creating the rain. Worship me. I am creating fire. Worship me. I am the treasure of all wealth. Worship me. But when they come into a difficult situation, they realize only Krishna can save us. There's no one but Krishna. So Krishna came and he wanted to show them what this mountain is for him. He came riding on Garuda Dev. And with two fingers of one hand, he just lifted the mountain. And Garuda is his servant. He's not a great demigod, he's just a servant of the Lord. He's not even in a human species, he's a bird. But if Krishna wants to empower his servant, he can do anything he wants. Krishna placed the mountain on Garuda's back. And then Krishna sat way on the top of the peak of the mountain while the mountain was sitting on Garuda's back. And then Krishna said, now we'll go to the ocean of milk. And Garuda was effortlessly. As he was flying, it explains his wings sing the songs of the Samaveda. Demigods and demons, they were. And until we move this mountain of ego in our hearts, we cannot take the nectar of bhakti. Bhakti rasamrita. Until that mountain is moved, the nectar remains dormant within our hearts. So it is very difficult. Even Lord Brahma. So Abhideya means first the anartas, the unwanted things start coming out of our hearts and are removed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then gradually we develop nishtha, great faith in the process of bhakti, faith in the mercy of the Lord. No matter what happens in our life, we know Krishna will protect. Like Prahlad, he was thrown into a pit of thousands of venomous snakes and he was not the slightest bit afraid because he had nishtha, faith. What do I have to fear? Krishna will protect me. Ambarish Maharaj, Durvas Muni threw a weapon of a fiery demon that was powerful enough to destroy the entire planet. And he was just standing there at Madhuba near the bank of the Jamuna. Krishna, what do I have to fear? If you want to protect me, what is this fiery demon? And if you want to kill me, that's wonderful. I'm thinking of you. So in this way, a devotee, when he has this nishtha, he's completely fearless. Fearlessness is not based on your own strength. We've seen your next door neighbor, Germany, when they built up huge, huge militaries with the best artillery in the entire world. They had the best airplanes, the best bombs, the biggest, strongest army, so many wonderfully engineered military tanks. And they went, just went in and conquered Poland and conquered so many nations because they were fearless. We are so powerful. But what is their fear? Ultimately, they were afraid like anything. Ultimately, the leader was hiding underground like a rat as the bombs were coming and destroying everything. So however great and big you may be in this material world, you cannot be fearless. The little Prahlad, he was only 5 years old. Hiranyakashipu was a mighty conquering demon, and all the Rakshasa forces, all their energies were against Prahlad. But he was fearless. Real fearless can only come from real faith. When we have faith in Krishna, there's no fear. Bhajahure mana, srinanda nandana, abhaya charanara vindare. Therefore, we should pray to our mind. Fix yourself on the lotus feet of Lord Hari, srinanda nandana Krishna. Only in that faith in Krishna can we be fearless. And only when we become fearless are we free from suffering and anxiety. So on practicing devotional service on the platform of Nishta, gradually we rise to Ruchi. Ruchi means we actually begin to experience the higher taste of loving Krishna, of serving Krishna. Where, as Jamuna Acharya has prayed, now that I am serving Krishna in devotion, even the most pleasurable experience of sex life, which I was so much attached to when I was a king, my lips curl in distaste and Prabhupada said, spite. Spit at the thought. How is that? Rupa Goswami explains, the greatest pleasures of this world are not even a drop compared to this massive ocean of pleasure that comes when we begin to experience what service to Krishna actually is. Now we're serving Krishna, but we're still on the mental and sensual platform. So we're getting some higher taste, but still we have these lower tastes that are always coming and attacking. What about me? Don't you remember me? These desires are still in our hearts. And we're saying, no, I want to forget you, but I won't let you forget me. I have so many agents. I will get you. I will get you. You just wait and see. Hare Krishna. So in this way, a sadhana bhakta on the Vaidhi path has to go on struggling. But actually, when we start getting very purified and Krishna sees we're really sincere and really trying to surrender, then by his causeless mercy, he begins to give us this ruchi, this higher taste. And then when Maya comes, you just say, Hare Krishna. Maya herself, with all of her power, came to Haridas Thakur in the middle of the night. Actually, she came at sunset, which is the most romantic time of the day. You know how powerful Maya is. One little fragmental spark of Maya's energy can completely bewilder the mind even of great yogis like Vishwamitra, or to speak of the rest of us. But the entire material energy with all the powers personified in the form of one woman. He came to Haridas Thakur's cave in Fuliagram and said, oh, Haridas, you are very nice. You are such an advanced devotee. You're such a saintly person. And you're so young and handsome. And look at me. It is the will of Providence. We are here together in the middle of the night and no one's around. So let us enjoy. But Haridas said, "Ah, of course I will fulfill your desire, but I have to finish my rounds." Prabhupada said, "Unless you are very, very strict about chanting your prescribed number of rounds every day, you can fall victim to Maya at any time." 16 rounds is what he has given us. Prabhupada said, "Unless one is chanting attentively 16 rounds every day, that person may fall victim to Maya at any moment." 16 rounds is not so much. Haridas Thakur was chanting 192 rounds a day before he would take water or food. 192 rounds, 300,000 names. He would sometimes take a vow to chant 10 million names in a month. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada explains what you have to do that. You have to chant 333,333 names every day, and then in the last day, if you chant one extra name, then you fulfill your vow. So that's what he was doing. So he just chanted all night. He didn't even notice that from her body was coming out all kinds of perfume fragrances of heavenly delights, and her words were like nectar to the ears. What to seek of looking at her? She was using all of her potencies. But Haridas Thakur just continued chanting, tasting the nectar of the holy name. Rupa Goswami explains, what is the power of the name? "I do not know how much nectar the two syllables Krishna have produced. When I chant the holy name of Krishna, I desire many, many tongues to taste the sweetness of Krishna. When that name, full of nectar, enters into my ears, I desire millions and millions of ears. When that name enters my heart, it conquers my mind and my senses become inert." When you achieve the state of Ruchi, that is what happens when you chant Hare Krishna. Now, we chant with one tongue. And we're thinking, "Oh, how many more rounds do I have to go? My beads. I still have 8 rounds to go. I thought I only had 7. There's so many things I have to do today. So many people I have to talk to. I'm hungry. I need to eat. I'm tired. I want to go to sleep. I have to make a phone call. I have to see what's on my computer email. And I want to talk to my friends to find out what's happening here and who said that there. So let me get these rounds done with Hare Krishna, because I have to do my vow." That's good that you're fulfilling your vow. But we're thinking, "Let this tongue end this chanting. I want to talk other things." But Rupa Goswami is praying, "Let me have millions and trillions and quadrillions, unlimited tongues. I still can't taste the nectar of the name. It is too sweet." And when the name enters into our ears, we're chanting, and if somebody's talking to us about what happened to this person yesterday in that place, our tongue's going like this, but our ear is going like, "Let me hear the nectar of mundane gossip, the nectar of prajalpa." But Rupa Goswami, millions and millions of ears are not enough to taste the nectar of the two syllables, Krishna. That is ruchi. That is the higher taste. And then ashakti, attachment, so much attachment to Krishna. When we have that attachment to Krishna, we have no other attachments to anything in this world. Rupa Goswami describes, if you are attached to your wife and your family and your husband and your society and your friends and your occupation and your position in this world, do not go to the bank of Jamuna on Keshi Ghat in Vrindavan. Do not go, I warn you. Because you will see Shamsundar Krishna playing on his flute in the moonlit night. And then you will lose all your attachment for everything else. Krishna is all attractive. That is Ashakti. And still, even on Ashakti, you can fall down at any minute if you're inattentive. And by practicing Krishna consciousness on the level of Ashakti for some time, very strictly, gradually you achieve the state of bhava. Even in the preliminary state of bhava, where you actually can taste love of Krishna, you actually know what love is, still you can fall down. Bharat Maharaj fell down. Prabhupada says if you are negligent in your prescribed duties, or if you offend Vaishnavas, or if Krishna, by his inconceivable mercy, just wants to do it, you can still fall. So we have to be very, this path of bhakti is very, very, we have to keep going. We can't look back at any stage until we ultimately achieve prema. Prema pumartha mahan, the ultimate goal of life, the crest jewel, the purushartha siromani, the jewel of all goals of life is this love of Krishna. And that is called prayojana. Prayojana jnana is the ultimate principle to be achieved in the Vedic knowledge. Prayojana means to love Krishna with unmotivated, uninterrupted desire to please him and to serve him. And Gopinath is the deity of prayojana. Krishna, who is the Lord of gopis, and gopis of Vrindavan, they illustrated ultimate sacrificial desire to please Krishna. When Krishna played upon his flute at Vamsi Bhat in the night of the full moon of the season of Sarat, they left their families, they left their children, they left their homes, they left the safety and the security, they left behind them their reputations as chaste women, just to please Krishna, just to satisfy Krishna. They are the supreme renunciates. They embody the ultimate prema. Therefore, Krishna loves to be called Gopinath, the Lord of Gopis. So these are the three principles that Krishna described to Lord Brahma. Essentially, in all the vast Vedic literatures, there's the Rig Veda, Yajur Veda, Sama Veda, Atharva Veda. Later on, these Vedas in disciplic succession were divided up by Vyasadeva, the literary incarnation, into the 108 Upanishads, the 18 Puranas, the Itihastas, the Vedanta Sutra, 100,000 verses of Mahabharata. Still wasn't satisfied until he wrote Srimad Bhagavatam, which deals with nothing except unconditional devotion to service to Krishna. No compromise. The other Vedic literatures teach pure devotion, many of them, but they also mix in many other compromises. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's sampradaya is no compromise. You may be at whatever level you are on, and we have to rise, but we do not compromise philosophically. We must always strive and aspire for that pure platform of what Srimad Bhagavatam comes to give us. Dharma projita kaita patra. No cheating religions mixed with economic development and sense gratification, religiosity or liberation even. Just devotion, just for the pleasure of Krishna. Even if we are the most fallen of the fallen, if we just connect to the sampradaya and keep that crest jewel of all goals as the ultimate worshipable object in the altar of our heart, then we'll achieve it by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya and his servants. So after being given this transcendental understanding of the goal of life and how to achieve it, Then Krishna taught Brahma how to create material universe and gave him the intelligence and the power to actually do it. So you may think now everything is fine. Now Brahma has created. But in Krishna, it's not so easy, even for Brahma. Should I tell you what happens? He's living in Brahma Loka. He's done his service. He's a surrendered soul serving the Lord. He lives 100 years. Every year has 365 days. 311 trillion years is his life. And his day is billions of years. But then he goes to sleep. Just as you go to sleep at night, Brahma goes to sleep. But do you know what happens when he wakes up? Hare Krishna. Unbelievable what happens. When he goes to sleep, from the Satyaloka planets, there's Satyalokas, Mahaloka, Tapaloka, Janaloka. These are the planets of the great sages. Below that is Swagaloka, the planets of the demigods, where they have opulence and enjoyment. But above them, the sages, their opulence is their meditation, their knowledge, their austerities. So, the Patala Loka region, Rasatala Loka region, Sutala Loka region, all completely devastated by this ocean of devastation. Then the ocean of devastation completely engulfs Bhuloka and Bhuvarloka, which includes the whole earth and the middle planets. Then it goes all the way up and completely inundates Swargaloka, all the planets of the demigods, including the sun and the moon. And then it even goes up to the upper planets of Mahaloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, but some of the sages there, they somehow, by their mystic power, they go up toward Brahmaloka, where they're rescued. So when Brahma wakes up, his whole creation, practically all of it, it's finished. It's all underwater. He has to start all over again. Every day he wakes up. And every day when he wakes up, he sees, how am I going to do it? I can't do it. He's completely bewildered. And again, he starts praying to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he begins to perform tapasya, praying and praying. And then the Lord appears before him and he tells him, Brahma, as long as you're humble and you know that I am the doer, then you will always be protected. But Krishna keeps him reminded of this every morning. That's what it means to be a devotee. You have to keep surrendering and keep working and keep completely taking shelter of Krishna every day. That's why when we wake up in the morning, the first thing we have to do is immediately start chanting his holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.
Very essential. Even Rama has to do it. Prabhupada and our acharyas explain what our mood should be as we're chanting Mahamantra. My dear Lord, O Krishna, all-attractive, supreme object of everyone's love. O Rama, the reservoir of all pleasure and happiness. O Srimati Radharani, the divine pleasure potency and the bestower of devotion. Please engage me in your service. Please engage me in the service of your servants. That is our prayer, and that is what Brahma is praying. Krishna, I'm completely ignorant. I don't know what to be done. I've created before and now I have to do it again, but I can't, no matter how much I practice. Brahma's now about 50 years old. He's in his middle age. That means 365 times 50. 311 trillion years divided in half is how many? 1.55 trillion years. Thank you, Jagannath Prabhu. It's always good to have a mathematician in the audience. So It's very, very long time. He's been doing this for 1.55 trillion years every morning, and still, when he wakes up, he doesn't know how he's going to do it. He has no power to do it. He can't do it. He cries out, Krishna, if you want me to serve you, you have to give me the power because I'm helpless. And this is the pure devotee, the father of every living being in the universe, the originator of the greatest of the sampradayas. And he has to pray like this every morning. Why? Because Krishna is the controller of all controllers. He's the ultimate doer. We are all subordinate to his will. He is the supreme personality of Godhead. Prabhupada is explaining here how Brahma is prarthayate. Prarthayate means begging. He's begging Krishna. He's living in Brahma Loka. Do you know what kind of a powerful, beautiful, opulent place Brahma Loka is? But still he considers himself a beggar. He's begging Krishna, give me mercy. Give me your mercy, otherwise I cannot exist. Thakur Bhaktivinoda explains, this is how we should approach our spiritual master, who's the representative of Krishna. Your mercy is all that I am made of. Think about that. Your mercy is all that I am made of. I have nothing else. My hands, my eyes, my ears, my ability to speak, my ability to move, it's all your mercy. There's nothing that exists except your mercy. This is intelligence. To have this realization, if everything is happening by the mercy of Krishna, we are helpless and subordinate. If Brahma is helpless and subordinate to perform his service, what is our position? We're like crawling little insects in this little planet. And yet we think, I am very great. See what I have done. Can anyone make a garland like this? Has anyone made sabji like I have made today? Just taste it and tell me how nice it is. And how I wash the floor? Just see, it is sparkling and shining. And how I manage? Just try to understand the glory of my management. And book distribution. Look at the chart, see who's number one. It's me. But actually, I didn't do it. I'm not the doer. Krishna did it. Krishna's the doer of everything. And hear me speak like this so you understand what an advanced devotee I am. Just listen to the nectar of my humility. And I will show you the path of perfection. So in this way, we want credit. We want appreciation and glorification. Of course, every living being, devotees should always be appreciating each other. That is the nature of loving service and exchange, is appreciation. Prabhupada always appreciated whatever any devotee did with a very, very grateful heart. But he didn't give us appreciation to make us feel great, but rather to make us feel loved by Krishna. When a sincere devotee is glorified or appreciated, it makes him feel smaller. It makes him feel, I don't deserve this. Krishna is doing this. But these devotees are so loving and they're trying to encourage me in so many wonderful ways. This is their glory. But I'm not them. But if we start thinking, oh, finally they have understood who I am, that is very dangerous. So devotees should always be trying to appreciate each other and what they've done. But we should also understand that when we are given this appreciation, we should feel encouraged to go on in our devotional service by that. We shouldn't become infatuated by thinking, I am very good. If we chant our rounds nicely every day, adhere Srimad Bhagavatam properly every day, then we will not have this problem. We'll understand what the ego is. We will begin to realize our position, not just theoretically, but practically, that the mercy of Krishna and the Vaishnavas is all we have to sustain our lives. Srila Prabhupada explains here so nicely that Krishna entrusts responsibility to his devotee. And when Krishna entrusts that responsibility, we should consider ourselves so blessed. Any person authorized by the Lord or his bona fide representative, the spiritual master, is already blessed, as is the work entrusted to him. So this is the greatest fortune, is when we're given a service. Do you know? Brahmanda Brahmite Krona Bhagyavan Jiva Guru Krishna Prasari Vai Bhakti Lata Bij. It takes millions of births, being grass and plants and trees, weeds, insects, lizards, birds, fish, all various types of beasts. Then we take a human form of life and we're engaged in all sorts of materialistic sense gratificatory pursuits in life. Millions and millions and millions of such births until we finally are given some service by Krishna, coming through his representatives, the gurus and the Vaishnavas. What a fortune, what a blessing it is to serve. Prabhu, can you do this service? Can somebody else do it? Why me? Why always me? Why do I always have to serve? That's not the attitude of a devotee. That means we don't understand what kind of we're thinking a rare jewel is a piece of broken glass. If you have a rare jewel, the most valuable diamond in all creation, and you think it's just a worthless, ordinary piece of glass, then what will happen? You will neglect it. When you neglect something, what happens to it? You lose it. Somebody will take it away. Who is that somebody? Maya. She's right there waiting for you to be neglectful so she can take it away. As long as you're guarding it, she cannot take it. Krishna will protect it. So devotional service is such a sacred privilege. It's so rare. Just to be able to clean this floor, it has taken you 8,400,000 species probably of suffering and dying and being in the wombs of mothers trying to get out. And finally, after all that, you're given the chance to wash this floor. And you're saying, can somebody else do it? That means we're not appreciating the mercy of devotional service, whatever that service may be. The devotee should always feel himself or herself a menial service. We should never think, I am great servant. Because who's great? Krishna's great. He's giving us the power, he's giving us the intelligence. We're always menial servants. Lord Brahma feels himself a menial servant. In the 10th canto, he started thinking himself a little special. He took Krishna's calves and cowherd boys. And a moment later, which was a year by earthly time, he looked around and every calf and every boy was still there. Krishna manifested himself as every cowherd boy and every calf. What is Krishna's powers? Each Krishna, in the form of a boy, looked just like that boy. to the finest details of their physical complexions. And they behave just like them, with the same voice, with the same attributes that their own mothers could not even distinguish that it's not them for 1 year. The only difference is they love their children infinitely more than they ever loved them before, because they were Krishna. They were wondering, how is it that I love my child as much as I love Krishna? And the cows felt the same way about their calves. They would just weep and cry and lick them. It was Krishna. Feed their milk. Krishna gave every gopi and every cow the opportunity to serve him just as Mother Yashoda served him. Exactly the same. Brahma came down and saw there's no change. The boys were still asleep in a cave, and they were still here also. Then when Krishna revealed his opulences, and each one became Narayan, four arms, and then Krishna wound it all up, and he was standing there with a lump of yogurt and fruit in his hand, thinking, where is my friends? Where is my calves? And Brahma came down and said, in the utter darkness of the night, a firefly gives light and thinks, I am illuminating all directions. But in the presence of the sun, the firefly could just give off as much light as he can. And it's insignificant. In fact, he realizes that whatever light I have is coming from the sun. So this is Brahma's position. That Krishna is great. I am just his insignificant, menial servant of the servant of his servants. That is the realization we should all strive to achieve. And that is how we should perform whatever service we do. Whether we're washing the floor or sweeping the streets, or whether we're distributing the books, or whether we're doing the puja directly to the transcendental body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We're touching his body, we're bathing him, we're dressing him, we're decorating him, we're offering him food, we're engaging in the very activities that are taking place in the spiritual world personally. Or whether we're a temple president. Hare Krishna, you have to listen to me because I am the president. I am authorized. Or whether we are temple commander. Just remember what this word commander means. It means I have command over you. Or whether we're a regional secretary. Or whether we're a GBC, or whether we're a spiritual master. Actually, we only have one position. Menial, humble service. And whatever service we may be doing, whether we're Hanuman lifting mountains or little spiders kicking grains, we're all servants. We're all menial servants. Helplessly depending on Krishna's mercy. And we're grateful for whatever service that we're given. And we try to do it with our hearts and souls for the pleasure of the Vaishnavas, for the upliftment of the conditioned souls, for the satisfaction of the spiritual master, and ultimately for the pleasure of Krishna. That is our goal. That is our position. Just to please Krishna in the most menial way as his servant, understanding our helpless condition. The more helpless we realize we are, the more we're making spiritual advancement. Material life is opposite of spiritual life. In material life, the higher you go, the more you feel yourself self-sufficient. The more you feel yourself independent. The more you feel yourself successful, proud. I have done it myself. I'm a self-made man. Hare Krishna. And the more you're like that, the more materialistic people, they think, oh, this man is success. they write so many articles about them in books, magazines, televisions. But in spiritual life, the higher you go, the more you realize you're helpless. The more you realize you are insignificant. Brahma, when he came right before Krishna, he realized, I am insignificant, like a firefly in front of the sun. The more you realize Krishna, the more you realize how much of an anudas you are, an insignificant servant, whatever position you may be in. And the bigger the position is not the quality of spiritual advancement, but the humility of the heart, the helpless dependence on Krishna's mercy. In Detroit, Michigan, also in Boston, Massachusetts, Prabhupada sat in front of his little Radha and Krishna deities, his little brass deities of Radha and Krishna. And he told a devotee who was with him, I'm just praying to Radha Krishna every day to protect me. Protect me from Maya. This is the way the greatest acharyas pray. Narottam Das Thakur, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, read their prayers. Do they say, I am great, I am powerful, I have conquered? This is the prayer of the great souls. This is the realization that Lord Brahma is talking about. And Krishna is assuring Brahma that because you are surrendered to me, because you are humbly taking shelter of me, understanding that I am the doer of everything happening through you, therefore your mission is already successful. And Prabhupada relates in this purport how Krishna said the same thing to Arjuna as he's telling Brahma here. Before the war even began at Sri Kurukshetra, Krishna told Arjuna, I've already decided who's going to win. It's you. He showed his Virat Rupa, Hare Krishna, big universal form. And all these soldiers were getting devoured by his mouths. Time I am, devourer of everything. And all these soldiers except the five Pandavas will be devoured by me. So now you fight, Arjuna, because it is my desire. So when we perform our service, the success of our service is not the physical result. The success of our service is that we please Krishna by our honest and sincere effort, our humble attempt. That is success. When Srila Prabhupada was in Jhansi, he spent 1 year developing that center. He put his heart and soul, all of his energy. He was already an elderly man. He worked so hard. That was going to be his international headquarters for the Krishna Consciousness Movement called the League of Devotees. And he worked so hard to develop it. He was preaching, he was printing brochures, he was collecting money, he was all alone, and he actually had a building, he had a place, he even had a disciple. And then what happened? One day, he was kicked out. They told him, you cannot use this building anymore. Go away. 1 year, by material standards, total waste. There was nothing to show for it. But he was perfectly a success. There's no failure, because he pleased Krishna. He pleased Krishna so much. But Krishna's desire was, if he was a success in Jhansi and everything was very great there and developed, when he came to America, it wouldn't have been so glorious. He may have gotten a plane ticket to America with so many followers waiting at the airports with garlands saying, Hari Bol, Jai Gurudev. Our love and respect for what sacrifice he made out of ultimate compassion for us would not be so much appreciated. But the fact that alone, with nobody to help him, no one who was willing to come forward to do anything substantial, He went all the way across the Atlantic Ocean on a cargo ship. Not even a passenger boat. Cargo ship. There's no comfortable compartment on a cargo ship. He was just there with all the big boxes. And John Mastami, he celebrated on the ocean, cooking kachoris and distributing it to these big materialistic boat workers. They're not gentle Vaishnavas at all. And then heart attacks, seasickness, dizziness, coming to New York, snow, cold, no money, no help, people threatening his life, disappointing letters from abroad, so much problems. But when we read about these things, we think, this is the glory of his compassion. This is his mercy. Prabhupada arranged. The failure in Jhansi was only to further magnify his success in New York, the success of his mission. Krishna wanted to show the world the undeterring compassion of his pure devotee. Therefore, there's no failure for one who pleases Krishna. That is our success, to please Krishna. Prabhupada says, anyone who takes pride in doing responsible work but does not give credit to the Supreme Lord is certainly falsely proud and cannot execute anything nicely. Nicely means in the eyes of Krishna. Materialists are very proud and they're doing things very nice materially. But our success is determined by how we please Krishna. Not by what we create with our hands in this world, or with our minds or intelligence. It's how we please Krishna. And what pleases Krishna? Trinadapi sunichena, tarorapi seshena. Amanina manadena kirtanina sadahari. Be more humble than a blade of grass, more tolerant than a tree, to offer all respect to others, devoid of all sense of false prestige, and expect no respect for oneself. Very difficult. We cannot do it, but we can pray for it. We can try for it. We can try to put it into our life. And if we sincerely aspire for this in our devotional service, Krishna will give it to us. The impossible becomes possible by the mercy of the Lord. And then we can chant the name of the Lord constantly. Hare Krishna.
Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So we should not be either depressed or anxious about the execution of our duty. We should simply be like Brahma. We should beg for Krishna's mercy. This service is for you. This service is for your devotees. This service is for my Gurudev, and this service is for... it's for the upliftment of the fallen souls. I'm begging you, Krishna. When we're distributing books, we're beggars. We're at every moment begging Krishna, give me the intelligence. I cannot convince this person to change his heart unless you give me the intelligence. Beggars are not proud of themselves. In Krishna consciousness, we're all meant to be beggars. What kind of society does the world think we are? We're preaching to be a beggar as the ultimate goal of life. What will your parents think if they hear this philosophy? They're telling you, you have a master's degree in a big university and this person's telling you to become a beggar. We've taught you so much, we've trained you up. I remember my parents, this shocked them. When I joined the Hare Krishna movement, the first letter I wrote to them from the Hare Krishna movement is I signed, your servant. and I rub my neck. Because that's the way we sang. And we just think it's normal saying, "Dear servant." It broke their heart into thousands of pieces. They wrote a letter back and said, "What do you mean, your servant?" "We worked so hard to raise you. We gave you an education. We gave you so much facility with so much abilities. And you want to be a servant? What's happened to you? We are thinking incorrectly. This is terrible. You should not degrade yourself by talking like this." Hare Krishna. The devotee is always very eager to be servant. And you know what I wrote back to them? I said, "I'm sorry. What I meant to say is, the servant of the servant of the servant." But somehow or other, now they're chanting Hare Krishna. It takes time. It works. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Is there any questions? Yes, Prabhu.
You expect that if you come to the present, we have to go through so many imperfections. And we're carrying the dust of so many imperfections all our life. Isn't it that we can also affect sometimes our karma, our imperfections? Sometimes the duty of other devotees, or even of your master. In this way, we misbehave in our devotional service, on neglecting the certain spiritual can affect also the duty of the spiritual master and bring him such difficulties sometimes also.
Actually, we can refer to Srila Prabhupada and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's disappearance day in the early 1970s. I believe it was in Los Angeles. Srila Prabhupada described the glories of his Guru Maharaj and the mercy that his Guru Maharaj bestowed upon him, and the mission that his Guru Maharaj gave him to spread Krishna consciousness or the mercy of Lord Chaitanya through Harinam Sankirtan all over the world. At the end of this beautiful lecture, Srila Prabhupada became very choked up in his voice. In humility, and he was begging his disciples, he was begging that, "I am very old, and at any moment I may die, but you are young. Please fulfill the mission of my spiritual." And as he said it, he was crying, begging his disciples, "Please fulfill this great mission of my spiritual master. Help me." So that was Prabhupada's weeping request to all of us who have received his mercy. If we misbehave, the mission is disturbed. When the mission is disturbed, the spiritual master doesn't suffer like a materialist suffers karmic reaction, but he suffers to see other people suffering. When we misbehave, and we have to suffer the reactions, the spiritual master, out of compassion and love for us, suffers by seeing our lamentable position. when we're not cooperating properly together, the spiritual master suffers in compassion because our petty little quarrels and our petty little attachments is blocking the whole world from the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. We are the carriers of that mercy. The world's drowning in an ocean of suffering and ignorance. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given the Yuga Dharma. And somehow or other, we've been entrusted to give it to the world. And if due to our petty little attachments and egoistic conflicts, we're not properly preaching, the world suffers. And Paradukaduki, the great souls suffer due to that. Srila Prabhupada also explained, sometimes the spiritual master experiences disease and anxiety due to the sins of his disciples. But that's on the basis of compassion. Our love should be to really, really give our hearts and souls to living according to this.
We have heard a little about the place in Bombay, temple there. Chapati temple, how it's called?
Chapati. It's called Radha Gopinath temple. It's not called Chapati temple.
Okay.
Chaupati is the neighborhood in Bombay that it's in.
It's maybe briefly.
But people tell us.
Tell us a little how this place, how people there are engaged in temple, how this place is supported, and how you preach about it.
How much time do I have?
Briefly, I said briefly.
Briefly.
My thoughts.
I am not famous for being brief. I'll try to be brief. Anyway, it's Radha Gopinath Temple. It's in the middle of downtown Bombay, in a very, very good place. Actually, if I tell a little story, you'll be very happy. But it will be less briefly if I tell the story. Should I tell?
Yeah.
I was talking about Jhansi. When Prabhupada went in Jhansi and he started the League of Devotees. So what happened is he got kicked out by Bharatiya Bhavan. They told him, you cannot have this building, we're taking over. And everything he gave his life to establish for 1 year, he lost it all by the Bharatiya Bhavan.
Hare Krishna.
So, there was a building. It's an inconceivable story, and I will not get into any details, because then I have to go into whole historical backgrounds. But we wanted to start a temple in downtown Bombay. Do you know how much land costs there? A temple room this big would probably cost $3 million. It costs, first square inches, you have to pay hundreds of dollars. It's one of the most high real estate in all of the world. Very, very costly. So, one of our devotees was helping with an orphanage called the Lady Northcote Hindu Orphanage. It started in the British time. And it was an old 110-year-old wooden building. And it was a little orphanage shared by three high schools. Very well. So, what happened is the managing trustee of the high school died. And he inconceivably made this devotee the managing trustee in his will. But he also said that the Bharatiya Vidya Bhavan should take over the orphanage. Now the Bharatiya Vidya Bhavan's main headquarters for the whole world is right across the street from this old building. Are you all listening to this story? Anyway. So what happened is, the Bharatiya Vidya Bhavan took over the orphanage, and the managing trustee just has to go along with what was in the will. And they understood this is such valuable property. So they moved the orphanage way outside to a village a little distance from Bombay, and they put their executive offices in that building because it's so costly, right in the heart of the city. So then what happened is we decided, actually, this will be a nice place for Hare Krishna temple. And not only a nice place for Hare Krishna temple, but we can actually make the orphanage into a gurukul and teach these orphan children how to be devotees. Pretty well. But how to get this building back? Bharatiya Vidya Bhavan is one of the most powerful, reputable, famous organizations in all of India. So what happened is, this managing trustee, whose name is Srinathji, he found out that one of the teachers of the orphanage, way out in this village, was caught with taking intoxicating drugs. So he went to Bharatiya Vidya Bhavan and said, "You have a spotless reputation. How will it look if all the newspapers all over India show how your helpless little children, you have teachers who are taking drugs?" He actually got arrested. This man. "That will not be good for your name. And therefore, I'm filing a petition that since you have such unqualified people taking care of these children as managing trustee, you are not a fit organization to take care of these children, so I'm taking them back. And if I take them back, I want to move them back to the original premise, which belongs to the orphanage." So they didn't want any bad reputation, so they moved all their things out and gave us the orphanage. And then we had a temple in downtown Bombay. There you go. So this is poetic justice. Bharatiya Vidya Bhavan took away Prabhupada's building back in 1950-something. And it was probably worth maybe 50,000 rupees or something. And then Prabhupada took a building away from Bharatiya Vidya Bhavan worth several millions and millions of dollars in the heart of the biggest, most expensive city. So Krishna always wins. But sometimes he makes a little weight. Shyam Sundar Prabhu, who was the original temple president of Bombay under Srila Prabhupada in 1971, he explained that once Srila Prabhupada was invited to give a lecture in the auditorium of the Bharatiya Vidya Bhavan, which is just across the street, about a 1 minute walk from our temple, heart of downtown. Prabhupada gave a lecture in this auditorium, about 800 people were there. He came out of the lecture, he was on the steps about to get in his car, and he looked across the street and he looked around and he said to Shyam Sundar, "This is such an important place for preaching. We should have a temple here." Shyam Sundar said, when he said we should have a temple here, he was looking right at the building, which about 20 years later became his temple. Shri Prabhupada ki jai!